Welcome to Friday afternoon. That means it's time for the Week in Review, and we're going to begin with President Donald Trump telling the world, mais non.
It is time to exit the Paris Accord. And time to pursue a new deal that protects the environment, our companies, our citizens, and our country.
Really, it's one of the most disastrous, shallow, untruthful decisions the President of the United States has made in my lifetime.
We have nothing to be apologetic about as a country. We have reduced our CO2 footprint to levels of the early 1990s, and that's been largely accomplished through innovation and technology, not government mandate.
This was a phenomenal economic opportunity for our country. The president has decided to just abdicate responsibility and walk away.
The president has made it clear since day one that his job is to protect the interest of this country and our citizens. As he said yesterday, he was elected to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Pittsburgh, not Paris, according to Sean Spicer. But what does Greater Boston think about America exiting the Paris Climate Accord? Here to discuss today, Renee Graham, columnist for the Boston Globe and a WBUR contributor. Renee, thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be here.
Also with us, Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Jim, it's always great to have you as well.
Good to be here.
You get first crack at it. Paris, good or bad? Do my John McLaughlin impression here all of a sudden.
Can I use my thumbs up or thumbs down that no one can see?
Turn the cameras on here in the studio.
Well, look, the fact is, if we're going to do anything on climate, it has to be an international agreement. And this is the international agreement that's on the table. The idea that we're going to renegotiate it is a non-starter. It is just not going to happen. So in a sense, if you care about climate change, you care about the Paris Accord.
Meaning you think it's a bad idea that we pulled, that the United States pulled out?
Look, the fact is, it's not surprising to me that Trump did this. There are all the reasons you might think about as regards politics. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, we will not be able to address climate change without it. So I think it's a bad idea.
Okay. Right? I had to work a little harder to get the straight talk out of you, Jim, than you, more normal. Renee.
Let me see. It's a terrible idea. You know, his whole campaign was built around America first, but this is more America alone. You know, this is the kind of isolationism I don't think anyone really saw coming. Is anyone surprised that he's pulling out of this? Not at all, but it doesn't make it any less shocking at the same time. I mean, you know, it's the idea that, you know, this is good for America and essentially saying, you know, the world can do whatever it wants. This is for us is ridiculous because the bottom line is that it's not good for the world. It's also not good for America.
Okay, so let me ask both of you this. I mean, one thing that I was thinking of yesterday throughout watching the president's entire speech in the Rose Garden was that this was going to be yet another one of those moments where the alternate universes were far apart, right? Like the president's supporters were hearing one thing, literally every line of his speech, they were likely hearing as exactly what they wanted to hear. America first, protecting jobs here at home, vulnerable industries, not wanting to relinquish U.S. sovereignty to the yoke of international cooperation. Where, of course, on the other hand, people were hearing the exact opposite, right? Folks who want the United States to stay in Paris were hearing America bowing down from the world stage. So, backing down, I should say, from the world stage and not doing its part to deal with climate change. So I guess, Jim, that's my way of asking both of you. I think this is overall, whether we like it or not, a win for the president regarding politics here at home.
It definitely is for his base. If you take a look at the Gallup poll, most recent Gallup poll, environmental issues were the number one issue for 2% of Americans. Now, in addition to that, I think what he's trying to say is, and the thing that struck me about his conversation was this is the point that he spent so much time on, even mocking the Green Fund. He talked a lot about how I don't want to send billions elsewhere to have a deleterious effect on people here. Now, people will hear that and they understand that Trump's mindset is one where everything's a transaction. And people like that he's fighting for them, the people who supported him. But the problem with that on a world stage is you cannot lead the world on a transactional basis. You have to actually lead. It's not that someone has to lose and only you can win.
Yeah. So on that point, let me play some tape from regarding international response to the president's announcement, because last night, French President Emmanuel Macron spoke out in opposition to what President Trump had decided. But he also had a message for Americans.
I call on you to remain confident. We will succeed. Because we are fully committed. Because wherever we live, whoever we are, we all share the same responsibility. Make our planet great again.
Renee?
I'm sorry, I like the line. You know, here you have the French president trying to essentially, it felt like, reassure the American people that despite the way your president is behaving and despite his decision to essentially pull out of this agreement, you know, we got your back because we're sure your president doesn't. The problem with what Trump has been doing and with this in particular right now is he's playing to his base, but that's all he's doing. You know, he made this big point after the election.
But has he ever done anything else, though?
No, he hasn't. Yeah. You know, and I'm not even going to use the word pivot because we know he does not pivot. But the idea is that he was going to be the president to all Americans. He's not even bothering to do that. And that's because, you know, he needs to be loved and adored. And the only way he can get that is by fulfilling the promises he made to his base during the campaign.
Mm. So let's talk a little bit about what the president said regarding his view on the potential impact on American industry if the United States stayed in the Paris Climate Accord. We've got a couple pieces of tape here. We spoke with Brian Deese. He's former senior advisor to President Obama, and he was actually Obama's point person on the Paris Agreement. And here's what Brian Deese said about the United States pulling out of the accord.
Acting on climate isn't about kumbaya or feeling good. There is a global competition, a race going on right now to figure out what countries are going to be the clean energy superpowers of the 21st century. Our country should be at the head of that race.
On the other hand, Scott Pruitt, EPA administrator, said something else entirely different. He obviously wanted the United States to pull out of the Paris Accord. And here's what he said yesterday in the Rose Garden.
Our efforts, Mr. President, as you know, should be on exporting our technology, our innovation, to nations who seek to reduce their CO2 footprint to learn from us. That should be our focus versus agreeing to unachievable targets that harm our economy and the American people.
So, Jim, I mean, I think as much as I actually disagree with Pruitt's take on Paris, what about the point he's making here that we can actually still be leaders in clean tech, for example, through exporting that technology without being in the Paris Climate Accord?
Well, see, this is where my hesitation up front is in part. I do have some issues with the accord, but I think at the end of the day, it's an agreement, and you can't go back and renegotiate. That's my point. But on this, I completely agree with him. And what I mean by that is the Paris Accord is a voluntary set of commitments. It does not preclude countries from moving forward and innovating the way they did before. But what's missing, if we're going to do that, is the president, even as he pulled out, could have said, the targets that we set as part of the accord, even if we're not going to do the billions of dollars to other people, we will meet those targets. And the fact is, as Ernie Moniz has pointed out several times, former Secretary of Energy, MIT professor, super smart guy, we're past halfway there. It is an achievable goal for us. But you need to have the government actually say, this is something we want to do in order to get people motivated. The president didn't even say that. And I think that's, for me, the biggest problem with what he did in the Rose Garden.
Well, to me, this is the central failing of what Scott Pruitt was saying, is that, you know, the United States, whether we like it or not, we're still today the world's number one emitter. We are. I mean, China is fast. On a per capita basis. But if we're not creating a market here at home for all the clean technologies that would reduce that, and that market in part would have been created if we stayed committed to these goals, I mean, we could have been the number one market, and we could have been the incubator for these technologies 50 times or 100 times more than just relying on India and China, who, by the way, are going to be doing the same thing with their innovators.
But at the same time, here we go back to, again, to Trump playing to his base. He kept talking about coal. He even threw in, I love the coal miners, but those jobs are not coming back. The industry has changed. It's all about cheaper gases and wind and solar. The idea that somehow this is going to bring back the coal mine and bring back big coal is just wrong. You know, and he's still sort of pushing this idea. But again, because he's playing to his base, and that's what people want to hear. So that's why you end up with someone like Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia, you know, right behind this idea, even though he's a Democrat. Well, he's sort of a Democrat. You know, you end up with that. But it's not going to happen. That's the problem here.
Well, I want to go back to the president himself. And this was possibly, you know, the biggest, one of the biggest applause lines, or at least the soundbite that people walked away with from his announcement yesterday.
We don't want other leaders and other countries laughing at us anymore, and they won't be. They won't be. I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
Of course, the mayor of Pittsburgh tweeted soon thereafter that his city voted overwhelmingly Democratic and wants to stay in the Paris Climate Accord.
Details.
But Jim and Renee, I wanted to play that because I wonder, and I know other people have wondered, Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas, she's in Germany right now, and she put out a statement yesterday to this effect. What consequence is this going to have when the United States does need to negotiate future agreements of any kind with any member of the international community? Jim?
I think for me that's the biggest issue from the perspective of our geopolitical positioning. Look, after the Trans-Pacific Partnership we pulled back, we leave an opening for China to actually go and negotiate and create different relationships where we could have actually been there as leaders in that region. We have just pulled back from another agreement, and now China and Europe will be leaders in that effort. We're leaving a lot of, if you will, leadership territory open for other folks to kind of run into. That's not how we should be doing this.
You knew that things hit a difficult point yesterday when you saw the leaders of France, Italy, and Germany releasing a joint statement about this, you know, and essentially saying, you know, well, we know where we stand and the U.S. can go do its own thing, but we are still on track to do the right thing. And that's not going to work. These are your allies and you are constantly undercutting them. So, yeah, I think they're going to be, you know, big consequences to be, you know, to be paid down the line.
Well, let's get some local voices here, local politicians who were reacting to the news that the United States President Trump has decided to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. Here's Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. She spoke on Wednesday. This is from just before the president made his announcement.
If this administration turns its back on the environment, cities like Boston will have to step up. I call on cities nationwide to do the same. We have helped lead the world in progress on climate action. We will not let this be undone by foolish political reasons.
Renee, it seems like there is room for state and local leaders to step up, as Walsh is saying.
Well, you know, the GOP always loves to talk about states' rights, don't they? So here we are. You have, you know, Marty Walsh was saying that on behalf of Boston. You also have 30 other mayors, 3 governors, you know, dozens of businesses stepping up and saying, you know what, we're going to actually adhere to the Paris Accord. So we don't really care what the federal government wants to do. We're going to still do the right thing. And so it's created this sort of odd divide within the country between what the federal government wants to do and what these states are doing. But, you know, they're committed to sticking to the standard.
Jim?
Well, this has been a longstanding set of activities around this, with the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative among a number of states that pushed higher targets. You've got California that has a number of states working with it as well. I think Jerry Brown carries a pretty big stick when he goes internationally. He goes to China. He wants to sit down and meet with them. They can still lead on this effort. Look, overall, I think the opportunity for states to actually cut out, especially East Coast, West Coast, a different kind of brand is fairly significant.
Mm-hmm. I just want to add one quick thing. I thought it was interesting today that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made a statement talking about, you know, how unfortunate it was that the U.S. federal government did this. He's separating the government from the people. He's not saying that America did this. He's saying the federal government did this. And I think that kind of tone we're going to continue to hear a lot more of.
So I want to play one last piece of tape before we move on to the week's other news. This is from this morning. This is George Stephanopoulos on Good Morning America Today, asking White House advisor Kellyanne Conway a question that's been so often asked before.
Does he believe global warming is a hoax?
He believes in clean air, clean water, a clean environment, and he believes that we have to negotiate better deals for this country and that there's a balance between environmental protection and economic growth.
I'll ask it one more time. Does he believe global warming is a hoax?
Ask him that.
Kellyanne Conway.
And I hope you have your chance.
I do, too. Thank you for coming in.
Same question was put to Sean Spicer multiple times today, and he basically said the same thing. You got to ask the president that. I mean, how much does it matter that we still, I mean, look, the president's historical tweets, he absolutely said that he believes global warming is a Chinese hoax. I mean, but how much does it still matter, Jim, that people don't have a fixed answer from Trump as president on this issue?
Well, I think it matters an awful lot because the solutions that have come from this, that will come on this topic, are from some of our best research institutes. We have some of the best laboratories, best finance structures to get this done, to be leaders in the area. Not to have the president there is a big deal, and I think you've seen that in terms of the reactions from people like Elon Musk and others who've said, we're off the various councils that are providing advice to you, right? So you're losing a lot of cachet in terms of the leadership potential of D.C. on this issue. It's going to go back to the states. But I do think, and I would underscore this one more time, I don't think, given that it was a voluntary accord, I think we can still march ahead and we can still innovate and do all the things we would like to do. What we really do need from the president is a target.
Yeah. Renee?
When do we ever get a straight answer about anything? You know, from Sean Spicer never seems to know what's happening. Kelly Ann Conway has her own ideas. You know, as you've said, we've seen it in tweets and we saw it during the campaign. He said repeatedly that this is all a hoax. So it almost doesn't matter what he thinks now. You know, I think it's entirely possible that Sean Spicer has no idea what Donald Trump thinks about the climate at this moment. So I'm not sure it really matters that there seems to be such discord in where he stands now.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another major story in the week's news, and that had to do with what happened on Tuesday, because federal, state, and local law enforcement officials announced that they had dismantled one of the biggest fentanyl distribution rings ever seen in Massachusetts. Officials seized more than 2 kilos of fentanyl in the raid in and around Lawrence. Thousands of doses, essentially, if I have that number right. Here's Michael Ferguson of the DEA speaking on Tuesday.
If anything could be likened to a weapon of mass destruction, in what it does to a community, it's fentanyl. A synthetic opioid 100 times more potent than morphine, 50 times more potent than heroin. It can kill you if you inject it in your arm, breathe it in the air, or touch it with your skin.
Now, over 30 people were charged in the raid, and according to the Department of Homeland Security, or I should get this right, sorry, Homeland Security Investigations, 16 of those people are allegedly in the country illegally, and 5 of them are back in the United States after previous deportations. Okay, so that's the background there. Renee, what's your thought on this big raid?
You know, obviously, it's a huge raid. You know, they shut down this sort of transaction. However, you know, the thing that's important, you also listen to authorities like, you know, this is big and this is going to make a difference. It'll make a difference for a while. But, you know, drug dealers are very nimble, you know, and if you shut down this corridor, there's already one popping up because addicts will want to get that drug and they'll go where they need to get it. So if it's not coming through, you know, Lawrence now, they'll find it someplace else.
Jim?
I think it's great news. I think it's great news. And I think that, look, this is a place where I'd like to say that the Trump administration deserves some credit. The U.S. attorneys have been working pretty hard on MS-13 and other gangs and very targeted actions against folks, including some illegal or undocumented immigrants who shouldn't be here and are doing bad things. I'm all for that. So I think they've done a fantastic job. I think everyone has talked about, was Paul LePage, governor of Maine, was he correct?
Right.
And
yeah,
all that sort of stuff. Do sanctuary cities help or not? Those are things that, and to Renee's point on, if it's not there, it's going to pop up elsewhere. If other governors don't think they have their own fentanyl centers, I'm sorry, they don't understand this. But for everybody, this was a big bust, and it will have multi-state impacts. And that's just a wonderful thing. 8,000 people would have been either close to death or dead as a result of those 2 kilos of fentanyl. It's just a great thing.
Yeah. Well, I want to play a little bit more tape here. Here's Acting U.S. Attorney William Weinreb. He was speaking at a press conference and talking about some audio or recording, essentially the callous nature nature of the way these folks who arrested were talking about what they were doing.
During the investigation, defendants were intercepted discussing the dangers of heroin and fentanyl, and even chuckling about overdose deaths as they continued to distribute the deadly drug. One defendant even bragged about having been deported several times and discussed the wealth he amassed in the Dominican Republic. While these defendants found their conduct amusing, federal authorities did not.
Renee, I mean, I just want to ask you about the part about the chuckling about overdose deaths. I think that's something that took a lot of people aback.
We're talking drug dealers here. And generally the way it has worked is, you know, it is the most potent drug. It is the most dangerous drug that becomes the most popular one. You know, I remember years ago hearing a story from a musician, Chet Baker, talking about being at a party and a musician OD'd, and they made all this effort to wake him up and bring him back. And when they did, he was upset and said, "You ruined my high." So, you know, the idea that drug dealers would think this is hilarious and be chuckling about it isn't really surprising. You know, because it's not going to hurt their sales at all. It's going to actually make more people eager to get that drug. It's like what happened with black tar heroin. And when people were ODing from that, it suddenly became the most popular drug out there.
Yeah. Well, we've got just enough time. I know these weeks in review are always so intense, for lack of a better word, that I always think, how am I going to make the turn to our hubbubs? Because I do want to end on a slightly lighter note.
Pivot?
Some good news. Yes, I will do a pivot. I'll do a pivot. So let's end with some good news and our hubbub. And I'm going to start with you, Jim. What's yours?
Well, mine is a story about entrepreneurship in Boston. It's often said that entrepreneurs get their ideas from self-reflection, like, wow, I'd love to be able to stop biting my fingernails, so I'll invent a wrist gizmo that gives me electric shock each time I do it. That's an actual product, by the way. The mythology about reflective entrepreneurs ignores the greatest incentive to create a business, which is anger. Enter Abu Musa. Abu Musa had a 7-Eleven franchise on South Broadway in South Boston. He grew so upset with the parent company's one-size-fits-all practice where they basically said, we've got really lousy food that's reheated and you got to sell it to your customers. He said, I don't want it.
Hot dogs, et cetera.
Well, they made him buy it. So after he lost his franchise during that argument, he went to court with them and he got them back. He one-upped them or one-downed them by opening his own store across the street, which he has named 612, and he has stolen half of the customers that were shopping at the old 7-Eleven.
It's not necessity being the mother of invention. It's fury. Renee, your hubbub?
You know, we've heard so many negative things this year about immigrants and also about the state of public schools that I thought I'd throw some wonderful stats about this year's Boston Public Schools valedictorians. Half of them hail from 11 countries. 75% are female. Half of them were born outside the United States, and 61% will be the first in their families to attend college.
Wow.
Take that, Betsy DeVos.
All right. Well, my hubbub, also, you know, every year I feel like the valedictorians have such great, great stories. But so my hubbub actually has to do with another Boston Public School student, because while the world this week was trying to figure out what covfefe means, if I said that right, is that even the right pronouncer for covfefe? There was an actual spelling bee going on, right, for real words, the Scripps Howard spelling bee, and 10-year-old Farah Hanif, a fourth grader from Winship Elementary School in Brighton, she made it to the third round in the Scripps National Spelling Bee. Sadly, though, she was eliminated because she didn't have enough points to make it further than the third round. But get this. So she successfully spelled stentorophonic in the second round, stentorophonic, meaning speaking or sounding very loud. And she also spelled collocutor. Can you do that? Collocutor, Jim?
Oh, man.
Go for it, Jim.
C-O-L-U-T-O-R.
C-O-L-L-O-C-U-T-O-R.
Oh,
that was close, though.
I put you on the spot there. You did a good job. So congratulations to Farah Hani for getting as far as she did. By the way, she's from Malaysia, too. So
there you go.
Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute. It is always great to have you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for the gold star in my failure.
Got to fail forward. Renee Graham, columnist for the Boston Globe and WBUR contributor. It's always great to have you as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Meghna.